Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
So today for Goals Question Time, I've got the pleasure of being joined by Sam Marchant. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Andrew, how are we?
Very good, thank you. Great to have you here. I think I first saw you, I guess, performing at a Seed Legal event with Anthony Rose on a panel and that there, and I was really impressed. And I follow you on LinkedIn, and you do some really interesting articles and stats and thought-provoking stuff. So I'm great to have you here to be chatting.
No, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me on, and thank you for those kind words. I do remember that event. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that was the event where I got the opportunity to pitch for yes. Once, and it was, yeah, tables were turned, which was it was fun. I haven't done a pitch since I was a founder, so it was quite nice to stand up and pitch the fund. And I remember the host said to me before, we're going to give you some really, really difficult questions, really put you on the spot. And I actually found the questions quite enjoyable. So yeah, I think they need to tune it up a little bit, make it a little bit harder.
Yeah, no. I mean, that was credit to you and that there. And so shout out to Anthony Rose, who's been a couple of times on my podcast, what he's doing with Seed Legals and that event. And that was fantastic in that there.
Yeah, he's good fun. You know, he's a massive runner. Did you know this? He's a very, very good runner. So yeah, if you ever catch up with him in person, try and get him out for a run. It's it's always a fun conversation. Yeah.
All right, great. Well, I've just come back from a 10K run myself. So,
There we go.
yeah. All right, that's a good one. Right, tell us a little bit about yourself and Hambro Perks and that first. Kick off with a bit of an intro.
Yeah, for sure. So, no, look. As I say, thank you for having me on, Andrew. My name's Sam Marchant. I'm an early stage investor here at a fund called Hambro Perks. I guess I'll talk a little bit about my background first, and then move on to Hambro Perks. So, I totally unrelated to venture capital and business. I actually studied sports science when I was at uni. And during my time there at the University of Hertfordshire, I co-founded a low sugar cereal bar brand. A random guy in my cohort or my course made a bet with me that I couldn't give up sugar for a whole month. In one of our first lectures, ended up creating this recipe from scratch. And then we kind of, throughout our time at university, while studying, scaled that into a kind of internationally recognized challenger brand. So went full head first into being a founder. I would say that I'm very envious of anyone who is setting something up or being a founder in tech. FMCG and F&B was very difficult. and there was a lot of learnings and a lot of lessons that we had to kind of take on. And that business ultimately, that scaled, we pivoted that slightly more towards a licensing model. We saw an opportunity just before COVID to kind of really strip down the core business and go from heavily manufacturing our own kind of products to actually licensing a brand out. And that's where the business really took off. Alongside that, I'd always been interested in entrepreneurship, made friends with many, many other founders, had started angel investing myself, and then was actually put in contact with an early stage VC fund in London called Ascension Ventures. Got to know the team there pretty well, and then was actually joined the team at Ascension Ventures in a very early 2021. So I think February time 2021. So and that was a great experience. You know, I'd never really considered venture capital. To be perfectly honest, I only ever considered venture capital because I thought, oh, well, when we inevitably exit for huge sums of money, I'll know exactly what to do with this. I'm very naive. So, I joined the team at Ascension. I think at the time we were a team of about six. And that, while I was there, that grew to about 14 people. And while I was there, I was looking after three core funds. So one actually was an FMCG, a fund focused on healthy food, so tackling childhood obesity. And then there was two other funds linked to essentially tackling what was called the poverty premium, so social inequalities funds. And one was a kind of traditional GPLP fund, and then the other was an EIS fund. And that was a great experience. That really, taught me how to go back to think, to think about first principles, to think about everything business related. It was like if you think about being a founder is doing an MBA in a very condensed and quite painful manner. That was the kind of icing or cherry on the top of the cake for me, was getting that VC experience. I was with the team at Ascension until July last year. And that's when I decided to I took some time off, and then I actually ended up joining Hambro Perks in November last year. So I guess when this podcast gets released, I've been at Hambro now for about 6 months or so. And look, the big difference ultimately between Ascension and Hambro Perks is Hambro Perks is a multi-stage asset management firm. So we have 9 different funds spanning from primary equity to secondary equity to venture debt, and then kind of our special opportunities growth funds as well. So, we're one of a very few select funds that could do, a check as small as 150 or 200K EIS, all the way up to those large later stage checks into growth rounds, Series D and beyondwards.
Right.
It's been a really interesting experience for me, coming from that early stage background, to be around individuals who are thinking about investments at the growth end of the market has been a really big lesson. But HB has a very distinct style. We like to really understand the sectors that we're investing in. We have an exceptional network of commercial individuals around us who can not only help with, due diligence, but also help with that value creation piece when we do make an investment, which is something that we're really, really big on. But first and foremost, if we strip it back a layer, we think about kind of company growth and startup growth and that journey with this kind of entrepreneur hierarchy of needs. And at the base of that kind of pyramid, so to speak, you just have money, access to capital. And that's something that at HP we really kind of pride ourselves on, is that we're able to support our founders to raise not only future rounds, but we have big firepower, big follow-on capacity, to support them as they grow. And I think there are kind of 4 key sectors that we like to invest in. So fintech, insurtech, digital health, sustainability, and then future of work and education. So yeah, those are the areas that we're really passionate about.
Perfect. Great. Wow. What a journey in that there.
Yeah,
And I like the fact that, you got up and did something yourself, and that when you were in sort of uni, saw an opportunity or took a challenge and all that there. No, there's a few overlaps in that there as well. Okay, Chimera, have you come across Chimera, a sports performance business?
I have, yes.
Tim Brownstone's been a previous sort of podcast
Ah, okay.
interviewee, and
Yeah.
that of mine, and also declaring an interest. I was one of the early investors in that, in Chimera. So that's
Okay,
performance
cool.
sort of health sort of business, and
Yeah.
and your interest in FMCG and healthy foods. I'm sure you've come across Paul Lindley of
Yes, I have.
Kitchen. So
Yeah.
Paul as well has got a couple of podcasts and that with me. He's become a good friend
Ah, nice.
of mine through some charity stuff and that we've done together, and his passion about startups and children's health and all that as
Yeah.
well.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing. Some of the people that are in that sector are just incredible. I mean, I have to say, I think it's a very challenging sector to be in, especially from an access to capital piece. Mainly because you are talking about getting, it's bars on lips or drinks on lips. You have to actually have this, access to distribution. Often it's very hard to have real innovation, like a real big leap, because we're kind of bound by food and ingredients, and if you don't have that kind of chemical or I guess biochemistry background to think about food in a totally different way, then it's very hard. I think one of the best investments we made at Ascension, and one of the most the biggest jump or leap in innovation I've seen recently in that space, is a company called Urban Legend. So founded by Anthony Fletcher, who was the former CEO at Grace and took that from very early on up to its exit. And now he's created, donuts with, over 50% less fat and less sugar versus, the leading kind of brands on the market. And he's doing exceptionally well. So yeah, it's very rare that there are real big winners that come out in that market. But when they do, it's huge, because it's very easy for those products to be liked and consumed once the distribution is cracked, right?
Wow. Well, so great. Look, great, Great introduction there to the sectors you've got experience in and where Hambro Perkson that is covering. Let's go through the journey of an entrepreneur then, from the idea and the MVP, and what's the sort of things that you would recommend or you look for within a startup. Let's focus on that early stage now, because I saw a recent LinkedIn post in that with you saying, don't come for investment, before you got the MVP or sort of something like that. So what do you recommend at that early stage?
Yeah, that was quite a contentious post, I must admit. And
Yeah,
I
there
think
was
there
quite a
was
few comments on that one, yeah.
a bit yeah, there was a bit of nuance that I think was maybe missing. Ultimately, I think the context of that post was, one, there are some exceptional tools out there, right, that will enable you to actually go away, build an MVP, and bring that to market. But second of all, it's actually something that I think most people who were commenting on the post missed, which is it's this assessment of one's ability to execute and to actually do stuff. We have kind of, and look, my experience of venture capital has been 21, 22, and 23. So in 2021, it was people with ideas, an exceptional team, and absolutely nothing. And we were throwing, big money around to try and compete and to fund them. Now, where the market is far colder, and there's a bit more skepticism because of the fact that a lot of big funds have been burned with down rounds and companies toppling over. People want to see a hard product, something that they can actually touch, interact with, and play with. But that's that kind of primary level of thinking. If we go down to that next level of thinking, that secondary level of thinking, ultimately it doesn't really matter what we think about as investors, right? It's actually what the customers think. And this is something that I see a lot, is individuals building products and solutions for problems that they have, that they believe there is a large enough market for. And they make this link between the pain that they feel and some market report, whether that be on Statista or FT, wherever it may be. And the two are just not linked often. And one of the things you're looking for as an investor is the ability to become extremely close to a customer base, to understand their needs, to iterate on a product, and to ultimately build something that they do actually want and will engage with. And I think founders would go through a lot less pain if they spent more time building and just focusing on customers in that kind of first 6 to 12 months region. And you can do that while you have another job, right? That's the beauty of this, right? You can do that while you have another job. You test these things, you gain feedback, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You don't have the pressure and the effects on especially on your mental health of taking hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars or millions of pounds, sorry, from someone else and trying to make things work. So
No,
it's a Yeah, it's a
yeah,
very
I
hard thing to
very much
say.
agree with you. I think that building that minimum viable product, and I think really with the entrepreneurs I like to see and talk to, they've physically created something. Literally, even if it's only out of a shoebox and sticky back plastic, or it's only a little bit of a website. I was coaching at Oxford University at the AI session and that last Creative Destruction Lab. And we had a half a dozen mentoring sort of sessions, but the one that stood out was the one that came in with their laptop and they showed me some AI speech improvement. They showed me one short clip of video before the AI thing they'd done, and they showed me another clip of it and that after. And it was like, right, wow, I get it. I know what the thing is about now, rather than like 10 slides into a PowerPoint. And it's like, I don't quite get what you're doing and that here. So whether it's a drink, whether it's a box, whether it's something that sort of shows that they've thought about it and they've interacted. And some things, of course, are going to be, they're going to be quite technical and there'll be
Yeah, of
regulations that
course.
have to be done and whatever like that. Or it might be, this is a bit of software and look what I've hacked together.
Yeah,
And
of course.
even if it's only a bit of a demo and say, well, this is what I'm trying to get to, but I'm not there yet. I need money to develop. Isn't it? That's what you want to see is show me the thing. I don't want these concepts of if we were 5% of this market, which
Exactly.
is big. I was like, well, what?
Yeah, it totally. And look, the way you even phrased that question there, Andrew, you said the term process, right? And investors understand it's a process. We understand that the MVP we see is not going to be, the final product and anywhere near what, the product is going to be 5 years down the line. So it's, I think there's, but ultimately this comes back to how venture capitalists have behaved with founders previously in the past. And I think it's very easy for me to say, and it doesn't make me better than anyone else, but it's very easy to say as a former founder, I have an empathy where it's, okay, I know you're on this development curve and I know that you're kind of going through this process. What I'm interested in really is the ability to get close to the customer, to iterate. And also it says a lot about a founder. I've met some incredible founders recently. In fact, I met an amazing founder and she said to me, she said, I don't come from a technical background, but I learned to code just so I could put this bit together. I needed to integrate this into my website. And you think, wow, like that's the kind of
Yeah.
person that you want to be backing. They've got a problem. They have a resource issue as well. So they can't hire anyone and they've
Yeah,
gone
yeah.
away and they've learned. Like, I mean, that's a great example of someone who's able to just go away and execute and get stuff done.
Yeah. No, execution, I think, was the key word, and that you raised there right at the start, which is great. So the next bit of the journey is usually sort of angel investor sort of phase, and you sort of say your tickets can go down quite low and SEIS, EIS. But in that angel sort of type space, I'm a founding member of Henley Business Angels,
Nice.
and I'm active in Green Angels sort of syndicate and sort of stuff like that. So, there's cohorts of our sort of co-angels and sort of stuff like that. So what do you look at that stage? And I guess on both sides, what should the startup be like and what should the angel be doing to support these startups then in your view?
That's a good question. So if I put myself on the founder side first, what would I expect of an angel? I would expect someone who is very open to communication. Someone who fully understands the risks of investing in early stage startups, because it can often be very hard for founders to communicate fully with angels when they're saying, oh, look, times are tough or this is really hard, and the angel all of a sudden becomes very protective and very defensive. And I've seen it before where they try and push certain rights through and action certain things from the legal docs, and you think, look, that's not in the nature of this whatsoever.
Right.
It's about putting your sleeves up and how can I help? So there's that. There's definitely a communication piece. The second thing is optimizing for fit. I always try and push founders, if they can and they have the ability to do so within their network, to look for founders who have, so that they can build out ultimately a full 360 degree team. I come from that FMCG and pro and also a sport background. I used to coach hockey at National League level, and one of the things that I bring into the VC conversations I have now, or conversations with founders, is how are you building the team out so that you have this full 360 degree view around skill sets and areas that you can cover off. And I think founders should try and do that. So look for people who understand products, look for people who understand sales, look for people who understand recruitment and bringing in new team members, going through this journey. Those are the people that you want, and those are the individuals. The other thing I think is that ultimately with angel investors, it's about them helping you get to the next step. I meet a lot of founders who say, oh, angel investors are going to lead this round. And I say, sure, but they're not going to follow on. They're not going to write the next big checks into
Yeah,
the
yeah.
seed or the Series A round. So actually, what capacity do they have? It's about getting you to the next step so that you can ultimately raise from arguably more institutional capital. And that's where it really comes in. And I think the last thing I would say is that I've connected some really strong angel investors to founders previously, some in my angel portfolio and others just in portfolios of both Ascension and Hamburg Perks. And I think those individuals, when they come in, there is now more than ever a brand that surrounds certain angel investors and the connections that they have to venture capital funds as well.
Right, yeah.
And there's always worth asking the question, right? If an angel investor, there are two angel investors and they're putting in the same amount of money on SEIS, one does know some VCs, the other doesn't know any VCs. You can make your own assumptions from
Yeah,
there.
yeah.
So yeah, that's how I would think about it. And then on the flip side, and this is a really good way of looking at it, what do you expect as an angel? Well, you also expect communication, right? I want founders to just be totally honest and transparent. We understand the or good angel investors understand the risks they're taking. They want to be proactive and actually helping helping the founders out and solving the problems that they do have. And then I think the other thing that I've seen a lot of, the really exceptional angels that I know, is that they're just constantly connecting and facilitating networks and introductions. And that could be anyone from a commercial introduction to actually other founders and just sharing ideas. Because once you kind of embed yourself in this ecosystem and you start networking with great people, all of a sudden you start, and I know we're going to talk about this, you start building other, different value chains and different ways of sharing ideas. And ultimately, in this real ideation formative stage of the business, that's really what you want, is a wide range of views and opinions and experiences that you can then bring and test with the customers ultimately. So, yeah.
No, excellent. No, great way of looking both sides there. And I, we're dipping back into my back catalogue of podcasts here. Peter Cowley, who's a great angel and that out of Cambridge, he's written a fantastic book that I recommend to, and I give it to a number of the startups that I've invested in Invested Investor.
Oh, yes.
He's written
Yeah.
that fantastic book, which is that bit about what does an angel look like and what should you look for in an angel, and it gives you great guidance in running board meetings and running due diligence and sort of stuff like that. It's a really re really good book. As I said, I give it to some of the founders that I've invested in and say, look, you need to follow this because that's what you should be expecting from me as an angel. And this
Time.
is what I should be expecting from you and being open and that with us. So,
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think, at that early stage, I mean, we don't write SEIS checks at Hambro Perks. And there are a number of reasons why we don't do that, but we kind of the smallest fund we have is an EIS vehicle. And I meet a lot of founders who say, oh, we thought that we'd be too early for you. And they're raising a 500K round or a 750K round. Actually, it's very strategic of us to try and push the EIS. And the reason for that is, we're able to write 150 to 500K EIS check. And we will pull in angels within our network to kind of join the cap table, who we know could add value. And they might be existing network connections, or they might be, someone has recommended this angel from a previous investment, or at the end of the day, from a VC perspective, it's our job to have a network of investors around us. And I would love to see more early stage kind of companies going to EIS funds and saying, look, I already have my SEIS sorted, but are there any angel investors that you have? Because I think there are some pretty, and I'm making a sweeping statement here, but we can talk about this another time. I think there are some pretty predatory SEIS funds out on the market that don't operate in the best way and don't have the best intentions.
I don't quite get why those funds and that are in that space, to be honest, because but going back to the entrepreneurs and the entrepreneurs being able to execute, if the entrepreneur can't find within their network people who are angel types, then I partly question, like, well, if you don't know people within the sector, people who are interested in this problem you've got, who are willing to write a check for 10K or sort of something like that. So you should be using that SEIS fund
Entirely.
to get your angels and that on. And then fair enough, I can see where you come in on the EIS side, but I find it odd that a fund is there doing that SEIS part, because then it shows that the entrepreneur didn't find those early supporters.
Yeah, totally.
I
And
find it.
look, and anyone can be an angel, right? I've written about it on LinkedIn before that, ticket size is not indicative of angel performance or the value that you're going to get from an angel. Some of the best angel investors I know are the ones who are writing 2 to 5K checks, and it doesn't move the needle really in terms of paying for a month's worth of burn or anything like that. But actually, what it does do is unlock a huge new network and someone who's really, really passionate about moving the business forward. So
I'm putting a bit of skin in.
exactly. It's always a balance. But no, and I think ultimately, I think with platforms like Odin, for example, now looking at SPVs and how you can structure your cap table, there is really no excuse, and it's as efficient as ever to kind of pull angels in and bring them onto the cap table.
That's the end of part one of the interview with Sam Marchant.
In part two, we'll be discussing about different phases of investment and also investment in clean tech and AI. Please give a 5-star like and subscribe for future interviews.